Live from the studios of KVTA, Ventura County's inspiration station, this is The Kim Pagano Show. Kim is Ventura County's mom and so much more, bringing value every day in every way. Join Kim and her friends every Saturday as they interview interesting and inspirational guests, everyone from authors and entertainers to doctors and experts. From A to Z, Kim's got you covered. And now here's Ventura County's mom and so much more. It's Kim Pagano.
Good morning, everyone. And of course, welcome to the Kim Pagano Show, the brighter side of life. It is Easter weekend. How did that work out? Oh my gosh, this year is already flying by. So I hope that everybody is having something yummy, spending time with their family, all that good stuff. We're going to do a little gathering here tomorrow and really just, you know what? Have some games, have some food, have some fun. That's what life's all about. And so I hope that you are enjoying it. And then next week I have my first mixer and it is completely full. I am so excited. And if you didn't get in on it and you want to, I have another one coming up. So definitely our phone number here is 805-419-0008. Again, 419-0008. Also, follow us through our social and download our podcast so you can hear all of our shows and take all of our amazing guests with you. And, of course, that is the Kim Pagano Show. With that, I love to start my show with something uplifting, and today's is be the best of whatever you are. Who are you? What are you telling the world about yourself? That's what life's all about. Look in the mirror and say, do I love what I look like? Do I love how I feel? Do I love how I show up in my life? Guess what? You can work on yourself. You're the only one that can make a difference. So I invite you to really look at that and invest in yourself. So with that, talking about investing in ourselves, I'm really excited with our first guest, Alan Meisner. His book, A Straightforward Guide to Health and Fitness After 40. And he was a coach, he's a national academic sports medicine, certified personal trainer, a precision nutrition level 2 master health coach, and also in functioning aging institute. There's so many things that Alan is going to be able to share with us today. But not only that, this didn't just happen. I was kind of reading a little story about him. And before his 39th birthday, Alan woke up and he just wasn't feeling the way he used to feel. And we're going to let him talk a little bit about this. But I'm excited to bring him on. And, of course, his book, The Wellness Roadmap, A Straightforward Guide to Health and Fitness After 40. So no matter when, I mean, if you're young and you're listening to this, do it now. If you're older and you're listening to this, do it now. The same thing really goes. So with that, Alan, are you there?
I am. Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome.
I'm really excited you said that because, you know, so many people will think that they're past their prime. You know, the time to get in shape was when you were in your 20s or 30s. But one of the wonderful, wonderful things about the human body is its capacity to heal and improve. And so if you just do just a little bit of effort, you can change your body and you can change your life.
I love that. What do we do? Where do we start, Alan?
Well, the first thing starts in your head. In fact, 90% of this or more is inside our heads. We tend to get in our own way. So the way I like to start, particularly with all of my clients, is just get to that basic question. Why? Why do you want to get in shape? Why do you want to lose weight? Why do you want to improve your health? Typically, it's the people in our lives. I know it was for me when I got started, and it still is today. I was in my late 30s and then early 40s for about 8 years trying to figure all of this stuff out. And then my daughter went and became a level 1 CrossFit coach, and she was loving it and reminding me of who I was when I was her age. She was basically living my life. And I was like, okay. And then she said these words, okay, and this is a Southern thing, but she said, Daddy, I want you to come watch me do a CrossFit competition. So my 20-year-old daughter wants me to come watch. And that hit me in my gut pretty hard because I had never considered myself a spectator in my daughter's life. I wanted to be a participant. And I knew at that point I was not capable of being the father I was supposed to be. And I was not capable of being the man I wanted to be. And so at that moment, I had my why. And my why was to change me so I could participate in the things that my daughter loved. And that's what really got me going, was that initial why. And then from there, I had to learn a lot about myself. I had to learn a lot about health, and I had to learn a lot about fitness. That's where all those certifications came from, was really just so I could learn what I needed to do the right things for myself. Because back then, there weren't online coaches, and there weren't people like me doing what I do. In fact, there weren't even podcasts on health and fitness for people over 40 at that point in time. So I had to learn this myself, but I was so motivated to do it that I just made it happen.
I love that. I love that. First of all, I just want to like go back to what you said. You said it was Southern. What was so Southern
about that? The daddy. When an adult woman calls
okay,
her father daddy.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Yeah, no, okay. I was like, wait, I think the same way, and I don't live out there, but I do have a daughter out there, so, you know, but... You know what? We want to be our best. We want to be our best for, you know, our family, for ourselves. I mean, not only that, just to, you know, it's so weird. I finally woke up one day and was like, I don't want to overeat anymore. You know, like I love food and my husband and I are both foodies, but you know what? You can still have it, but not overdo it. And so it's like there's like a lesson there, you know, it's like getting a speeding ticket every single day and realizing like I'm going to get to the same spot and enjoy it, but I'm not going to drive fast. You know, it's the same thing. It's like a realization that we can all be really healthy and yet enjoy good food, just not overdo it. Correct?
Yeah. Now, the way I like to look at it is this. Okay. What I wanted when my daughter was doing these competitions was I wanted to be able to do what she's doing and have fun while doing it. So my vision of fitness was very intense. But for most of us, that's not really where we need to go. And you'll hear people say, I hate working out. I hate sweating. I hate exercise. I don't want to do this. I don't like doing this. So the advice that's usually put out there is just do what you like. Do what you like to do. But I think you go deeper than that. And what I like to do is I like to look at fitness as fit for task. And so the question I would ask is, who do you really need to be tomorrow? Now, I live in a bed. I work in a bed and breakfast with my wife. And
I
have to move luggage.
I
have to move bottles of water. Yeah, I have to do these physical things. And so I want to be able to do that. Also, I know that we age because I'm in my late 50s. My wife's in her mid 50s. At some point, she may need my help, and I want to be physically capable to be there for her. And then finally, I don't want to be dependent on others. My father did that, and the last 5 years of his life were miserable. I don't want that for myself. So I joke about this, but I want to be able to wipe my own butt when I'm 105.
You know what? And amen. I hear you. And you know what's funny is I have a girlfriend who does, you know, like is in physical therapy, and she's like, you need to be able to lift yourself off the toilet by yourself. You know, you don't think of those things when we're young, but as you get older, you're like, holy, I do not want people helping me do that. I totally agree with you.
And so yeah, building some leg strength, building some stamina, building some mobility. You know, when I got remarried to my current wife, Tammy, and she had a granddaughter, and that granddaughter, for one reason or another, Addie was just terrified of me. And so one day I'm like, I have to fix this. And so I grabbed my laptop and I went on YouTube and I found an episode of SpongeBob. And I walked out onto the floor, it was a tile floor, and I set the computer on the floor and I sat down there and I started watching SpongeBob. And so she comes over because this is her favorite show. She sits down next to me and we watch the whole episode. And at the very end, then I turned to her and I say, would you like to watch another? And she said, yes, please. So I found another episode and we watched another. Now, most people would say in their late 50s or mid-50s or 40s, they wouldn't want to sit on a tile floor for any period of time. And the joke is, I don't get on the floor unless I have a plan to get back up. But I was able to comfortably sit on the floor. You know, you squirm a little bit because that's just natural. But we watched two episodes of SpongeBob, and it changed my relationship with that girl forever.
I love it. That's awesome.
And so that's when you think about fitness, it's about your ability to do things that you need to do. And if you can't get on the floor with your grandkids, if you can't follow them to the zoo and you're sitting on the bench at the entrance waiting for them to leave and tell you what the zoo is like, you're not living your best life. And so I don't want to be a Debbie Downer here, but you have the capacity today to work and build strength, to build stamina, to build mobility, and to be the person that you need to be so that you're fun, you're living the life to your fullest, and you're independent as long as possible.
Wow, I love it. I guess it goes with my beginning of my show, be the best of whatever you are, right? That always works that way. So let me ask you, okay, if it's not just the food we eat, it's really like, you know, one of my sons loves playing pickleball, and he said, Mom, everybody's over 50 out there. And I'm like, you know, I had just broken my foot. It's healing now. That's my goal, to get out there with my son and play as good as him, you know, well, probably not as good as him, but with him, you know, and that's what, you know, so we do have goals in our lives. And I have five grandchildren now, and you know, we just had a new one, and I want to go on hikes with them, and I want to do all that stuff. So
I couldn't even imagine sitting in a rocking chair watching kids play on the ground. I'm gonna be on the floor with them. I'm gonna be running around with them. And so with my daughter, to get myself where I needed to be, I actually did a Tough Mudder with her. And a Tough Mudder, if you don't know, a 12 to 13 mile race, it's not on flat course. It's out usually where they're doing ATV stuff. So it's muddy, it's hilly. And you do this 12 mile race. They threw in like 25 obstacles just to make it more fun. A really hard, hard thing. I trained myself up for that at the age of 45. And I did that with my daughter without slowing her down. I don't know what my grandkids are going to be doing, because we didn't have Tough Mudders when I was her age. But I'm going to be capable of doing those things. I'm going to be trainable to a point where I can do things that I can be a part of their life. It's different than being a spectator. I can't even envision myself being a spectator.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So you are a trainer. So where do we start?
Well, again, like I said, we start with our why, and then we get a vision of what we want to accomplish. So for some individuals, that might be doing something intense, like Tough Mudder. For others, it might be getting your body to a point where you can play pickleball. For others, again, it might just be having enough leg strength and stamina and speed to be able to do basic things for yourself, to be able to open your own pickle jar. And so you can train for those specific things. So usually we'll sit down and I'll do an exercise with them to talk about what they really want out of life. And then we set up a training plan. And that's why I think people say they hate workouts, they hate exercise. I call it training. You're training to be better tomorrow. And so if you can sit down and say, okay, I know I need some strength. So I give the client a full body resistance training program for this. They go through, they work out for about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour. Most will start out with just body weight, maybe some resistance bands to add some flexibility to it. And then we build some strength. We can build stamina based on where you are. I had one client, she tells me, I get winded walking to my car in the carport every day. And so I said, okay, well, here's what I want you to do tomorrow. Tomorrow, when you walk to your car, I want you to do one lap around the car before you get into it. And she did that for a few days. We checked in. She says, you're not hard, but it's getting easier. And I'm like, okay, next time, two laps. And within a few weeks, she's walking in the neighborhood in the afternoon because she's built up stamina to be able to do what she wants to do. So it can start small. It should start small. And then we want to do just these gentle nudges, just a little bit more. One more lap around the car, you know, that kind of way. One more pound, one more this. Just a little bit more each time. you do it and your body gets stronger. This was one of the beautiful things about the body is when we do the right things for our body, it just gets better. So if you're eating better food, your body gets better. If you're moving better, your body gets better. And so those little incremental changes over time are how you build a healthy lifestyle, and your body just gets better and better.
I love it. I love it. And you don't want to hurt yourself. So how do you listen to your body? You know what I mean? Like, you want to push yourself that little bit more, but you don't want to hurt your body. How do you do that?
Right. So yes, for a muscle to grow, okay, the technical aspects of it, we have to stress it. So we have to put some resistance on it. We have to push it a little harder than it would normally go. So just outside the comfort zone. And yes, we are in fact causing some damage to that muscle. And as a result, the muscle must heal. Now, the communication within the body, if we give it adequate protein and other nutrients, your muscle will get stronger. Where we break is when we start getting a little too aggressive with certain things. So if you just went out and grabbed that paddle and ran out there and started trying to play, you might hurt your ankle, you might re-break your foot, you might fall and fracture something. So what you want to do is you want to go in and say, okay, how is my balance? How is my agility? How is my strength? How is my stamina? And then just start putting together other activities that will help you build those things up. So, you know, again, when we talk about agility, it could be something as simple as doing side shuffle from one side of the court to the other, just to practice doing side shuffles, because that's a basic movement in that game where you're going to step to the side and swing the paddle. So just those side shuffles, and then getting more comfortable with maybe crossing one behind the other. So there's a little bit of balance work in there along with that stamina of going back and forth and the agility of it. And so you just start working and you get better and better. And at some point you'll feel confident. Okay, I've got stamina to stand up here and do this. I can move side to side comfortably and feel good. I can get my feet in place quickly enough. Now I'm ready to hit the ball. You may find that you don't have the upper body strength to hit the ball as hard as you want to. So you start training some upper body strength, and within time, you're able to hit the ball much harder and move faster. And so you just kind of play with what you have and then do little incremental things. The best things in our life do not come from staying inside your comfort zone. They come from getting just outside your comfort zone. But if you go too far outside your comfort zone, you will wreck yourself. It's again, in fact, your body can only go so far past where you are right now before it's going to give you the basic full stop. We're breaking something so you don't break the whole body.
Okay. That's how it talks to you. I love it. And, of course, your book, The Wellness Roadmap. Talk to us. What are we going to find in your book?
Okay. So this kind of retraces my journey and the things that I learned as I was going through this. You know, the core of it starts with what I talked about is what's your why and what's your vision, and then a better understanding of how you look at things and your patience level. I talk a lot about patience. I talk a lot about pacing and taking those gentle nudges and to do all of those things. So this literally walks you through the whole journey, to include getting at the end when you've hit your fitness or health goal. You know, it's not time to stop. It's time to celebrate and then calibrate and then go again. And so I basically give you the tools to go from front to back on a health goal to make sure that you get yourself better off. I didn't talk as much about motivation in that book as I teach now, because I've learned a lot coaching thousands of people. But I do get pretty good deep into self-awareness and how you can, by understanding yourself, keep yourself rolling forward, moving towards that goal through each of your incremental little goals and those gentle nudges. And again, making yourself who you're supposed to be.
I love it. Alan, I want to have you back. And I also want to find out about your bed and breakfast. What made you and your wife move over there? And so there's a lot more I need to talk to you about, but leave us with three little tips. We have 1 minute more. Three little tips that we can do today for our listeners.
Okay. The first thing is sleep quality. And you probably didn't expect that from a fitness coach. But sleep quality is the most important thing. If you're not sleeping well, nothing else works well. The second is eat whole food. If it comes in a box, bag, jar, or can, be very leery that what you're eating might not be whole food. And then the third one is move your body every day. We were designed to move. We were designed to do work, to get things done. And in today's society, we just don't move enough. So incremental movement, a little bit more gentle nudges, but try to move every single day.
I love it. Alan Meisner, thank you so much for joining us. His book, A Straightforward Guide to Health and Fitness After 40. We're going to have you back for sure. Please share our show with everyone. And thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Kim. Appreciate this.
You got it. All right. We are going to take a really quick break. And, of course, you are listening to The Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Manhattan of Camarillo, located in the heart of the beautiful Santa Rosa Valley, is a locally owned, multi-regional classic Italian restaurant with an extensive wine list. You'll be greeted with warm, friendly, attentive service. Wednesday evenings from 3 to 8 p.m., Manhattan of Camarillo offers a signature three-course menu for $25. For a bit more casual atmosphere, check out Trivia Thursdays in their beer garden with a full bar and craft beer selections. If you're into live music, come see some of Ventura County's premier local talent where you can dance the night away on a large dance floor. Manhattan of Camarillo's private wine and banquet room holds up to 40 people. Make your reservations today or book your next private party. Dinner is served Tuesday through Saturday with easy access off the 101 at Pleasant Valley Road.
Call today for a reservation at 805-388-5550.
That's 805-388-5550. Or go to themanhattanofcamarillo.com.
If you're a business owner or looking to be one, put Littlefoot Construction on the top of your list. Littlefoot Construction specializes in restaurant remodels, tenant improvements, office remodels. Call Littlefoot Construction with all your commercial and industrial needs. Littlefoot Construction works with big or small businesses. Or even if it's a dream, Littlefoot Construction will make your vision come true. Call Littlefoot Construction at 805-491-2759. That's 805-491-2759 for all your construction needs.
TNT Anger Management Services knows that sometimes we get overwhelmed at work and home with our deadline. Try these three tips to help you regain order and focus. Number one, staying focused on the priority should be your main objective. Number two, we all know the word multitasking is highly overrated, so try to keep it simple. Number three, set boundaries for yourself, eliminating side talk and chatter, which can be really disrupting when you have a deadline. These are just some ways to collect oneself, complete your lead task. For more information, visit TNTAMS.com. Or if you're experiencing a lack of focus and anger, please feel free to call Norman Thatcher, the facilitator and owner of TNT Anger Management, directly, 818-264-6255. That's 818-264-6255, or go to TNTAMS.com.
Are you worried your perfect customers are finding you online, then clicking away because your website makes your business look outdated? Imagine this, having a website that reflects your expertise and professionalism. Peace of mind knowing your website is kept up to date and secure. A managed hosting plan, especially for your website. If you're ready to have all that you imagined, visit webweaversconsulting.com for WordPress website packages, maintenance plans, and hosting plans. Webweavers Consulting will make your website work for you so you can focus on making a difference in your own unique way. That's webweaversconsulting.com.
Are you ready to empower your child with the skills they need to safely enjoy the water? Kim O'Brien with Survival Swim with Kim, Infant Aquatics, teaches self-rescue swim skills to children of all ages. Self-rescue skills can save a child's life if they accidentally fall into the water. After losing her daughter to drowning, Kim became a certified survival swim instructor to help families in Ventura County protect their children. Survival Swim with Kim teaches kids 6 months and up how to roll and float independently. Don't wait. Check out SurvivalSwimWithKim.com. That's SurvivalSwimWithKim.com or call Kim at 805-620-7177. That's 805-620-7177.
Now back to the Kim Pagano Show.
Finally on KVTA.
Welcome back, everyone. And again, thank you so much for joining us here. And of course, my next guest is Daniel Payden.
And we're going to be talking about if your dog or cat needs a transfusion, where does your vet get that blood from? Let's welcome him. Daniel Payden is a vice president of evidence analysts for the investigative division of people for the ethical treatment of animals. And of course, we're talking about PETA. And he works for you, right? The eyewitness investigators. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, it's interesting. My daughter's dog had a blood infusion, which we had never heard in our life about it. And so I'm interested to talk a little bit about this. And of course, we're looking at the inside captive animal blood banks, which doesn't sound good right off the bat. But talk to us a little bit about who you are and, of course, what we're here to talk about.
Sure. Thanks. So I do. I get to work with our investigators who go to work at all sorts of facilities around the world and expose animal suffering, expose industries that consumers, that government officials don't know enough about. And one of those is this blood banking industry, animal blood banking industry. And what we found, including in California and in Indiana and Texas and in Michigan, for instance, is that many facilities are keeping dogs and cats caged and in kennels almost 24 hours a day for years, in some cases for their entire lives, solely to take their blood and then sell it to veterinary clinics for these transfusions like your daughter's dog underwent. And many veterinarians are just as unaware of this industry as are, you know, caring animal guardians. And so it's a real effort to raise awareness among both those of us who care for animals at home, but also the vets we lean on to care for those animals when we have sicknesses and injuries, to move away from that captive animal model and to just source blood from dogs and cats who live in homes with families like ours.
Wow. Well, thankfully, I just want my listeners to know that we actually, our dog got it from one of the vet's dogs. And so that makes me feel better because I didn't know anything about this, you know? Talk to us a little bit about.
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Daniel. No, go ahead and finish up. I was just saying, thank God, you know, that we didn't know about this, but ours did not come from a captive dog. That would be cruel and on all levels. So, yes.
And your experience shows the alternative. It shows that it doesn't have to be that way, you know, and unfortunately, many veterinarians are not as forward thinking and progressive and thinking outside the box as your daughter's vet is to say, we can find this life-saving transfusion from my own animal or from another family member's animal. And instead they just, you know, go online and they order a bag of blood, and unbeknownst to them, it's coming from a dog who's locked in a cage on a hard floor, no bed, no chance to go run in the grass. And that's their so-called life for 10 or 12 years, but there is an alternative, and thankfully vets like yours see that and practice that.
Yeah, and so how many people, I mean, what can we do to prevent this? Because, gosh, I mean, right there, it's so black and white.
You know, in addition to having conversations like, you know, your family had with that vet, people can call on larger clinic chains like VCA, which is based in Los Angeles. It has, you know, numerous locations out west. They're sourcing blood, unfortunately, from captive animal facilities. And so the call really there is to say, look, you know, you're a massive company. You have all the resources in the world to develop community-based blood banks to work with guardians who want to volunteer their animals for donations. Move in that direction and phase out and stop buying from animals who are kept captive in cages.
Wow. And let me ask you, you know, unfortunately, we see a lot of animals that have passed away. Can we still use their blood?
Unfortunately, you can't. No. I mean, there's certainly organ donation, but blood is not able to be taken past that point. The good news is that there is a pretty good shelf life, so to speak, for blood products that are taken from animals. So if someone takes their dog or cat in for a physical and says, hey, can I volunteer, you know, a small quantity of this animal's blood to help some other animal in need? Most vets can then take that, store it, and keep it safely for some period of time and use it, even if the need doesn't arise tomorrow or next week.
Hmm. Yeah, because we needed, obviously, a big dog that could, you know, that it wasn't going to hurt. It's kind of like people, right, of donating blood. Is it the same kind of concept?
It's similar, yeah. You obviously want the donor to be very, very healthy. You want to do that both for the donor's sake, but also for the sake of the animal who's going to receive the transfusion. So you need a larger animal, obviously a well-tempered animal who's not going to get overly stressed by the donation process itself. Someone who lives indoors isn't exposed to parasites and diseases that can then transfuse into the patient who's dying on the operating table, so to speak. So it's a very careful process. There's a lot of screening, just like it is for us, you know, at the Red Cross. It's life-saving medicine, clearly. It's just moving away from taking it from so-called blood slaves, you know, locked up in Indiana, and more towards working with someone who lives in a home with a family, donates blood, and then goes home at the night with a treat and, you know, to a warm bed.
Right, and it's rewarded for their, you know, their donation. So let me ask you a question, and of course for anybody that's just waking up with us, starting your day in a positive way here on the Kim Pagano Show, the brighter side of life and business. Daniel, how did you find these, or, you know, what are these investigations that you've been, that you have been doing?
We were tipped off to the first one several years ago by a man in Texas who worked at an operation that had 151 greyhounds in an old turkey shed. And he was really nauseated by what he saw. He was trying to improve conditions for the animals. His complaints fell on deaf ears. So we went and helped him expose what was happening there and raised awareness. Since then, we've had investigators work at three facilities, one, in fact, in Orange County, California, another one in Indiana, another one in Michigan. In all these instances, we're finding animals kept in barren kennels, no bedding, no enrichment, no real life to speak of, very little exercise, oftentimes neglected health, which of course is bad for them, but also bad for the patient receiving their blood. You know, in short, facilities that are in it to make a buck and not really to serve animals' needs.
Right, right. And again, Daniel, tell us your affiliation with this.
So as a vice president at PETA, or People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, I work hand in hand with these people who go in and work at these facilities, wear the hidden cameras, write detailed blog notes every day, and then I go with them to meet with the police, with the sheriff, with the state regulatory agency in hopes of, you know, what few laws apply to these animals, getting those laws enforced for the sake of the victims.
I love it. And Daniel, for our listeners, they love animals. I know, because I know that's who I attract, because I am so passionate about my animals. Where do our listeners find out more, and how can they become involved?
Thank you. They can go to PETA.org, PETA.org /blood. We have there all the information on these exposés, and also make it very easy for them to take action to help animals trapped in these facilities.
I love it. Again, thank you for your work, and thank you for, you know, making our world a better place. So
thank you, Katie.
Daniel.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right. Take
you
care.
As well.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
And our next guest is Philip Tofier, and of course he has been teaching writing for so long. If you've been waiting to write a book, definitely listen to this.
I'm excited to talk with Philip Tofier, and of course I don't know about any of you, but I've been trying to write a book for a long time. I've got all my stuff that I need, but we're going to find out a little bit more about how to write a book, and of course, let's welcome. Philip, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Kim.
How are you? Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself. And, of course, thanks for writing this book. make it easy on the rest of us, right? And of course, you know, this is all about, you know, kind of cutting to the chase, correct?
I say that again.
Cutting to the chase, right?
Now, cutting to the chase. Yeah. I've been a writing teacher at the university level, and right now I'm teaching writers, which is a private writing company in New York. They do online and in-person classes. So I've been a writing teacher for many years. I started writing when I was like 9 or 10, and this is my 7th book. It's called Night and Its Longings, and it's a tale of desire, adultery, and crime. It's like both a love story and a mystery intertwined. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Very cool. What got you, I mean, back when you were 9 years old, what got you interested? Did you have a mentor, or was this just like a kind of a passion to learn how to write?
Yeah, I thought about that a lot, and I'm not sure I have the exact answer, but just a number of factors. One, you know, I mean, my father was a big reader and brought books into the house. I would, you know, listen to radio programs, and the stories I would write were either cowboy stories or mystery stories. I didn't yet know how to write a love story, so that came later. I would write these stories, and I would make little books and draw the cover and staple them together. It was just something that I came naturally, and also I think it was a way of filling, you know, all the alone time, you know, those hours when you're alone, and what do? Yes, you can play some games for a while, but after a while you want to do something a little bit more substantial, and I just would start, you know, telling these stories, and I guess I was influenced by the radio programs I was listening to, you know, many of them in those days, mysteries like Inner Sanctum and The Shadow and
The
Green Hornet.
you know what comes to mind when you talk about that is a lot of people can relate to this nowadays, because I don't think we knew how to do that before, but visualizing. So you're listening to a radio show, or let's just even say if you closed your eyes and you're watching TV, you would have your own picture of what was going on, correct? And you would start to make your own movie. And so I think that's really what you're doing, correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's extremely stimulating to your visual sense, and I particularly try to be as visual in my imagery as I can. And in A Night and Its Longings, what came first before even I had a character was just these images of night, these pictures of night, you know, night in the city and, you know, various sections of the city and, the parks, you know, the streets and the different quality and mood, that nighttime images, bring. So I think you're exactly right. That's what it was about radio that, fostered a kind of visual imagination, because all you heard were footsteps or a door opening. And then you had to put together everything else.
That's right. I love it. So for somebody that wants to write a book, I mean, if nothing else, you want to leave your legacy, right? Your golden nuggets from your life. And what tips could you offer all of us as getting started?
Sure. And I think everyone does have at least one book in them. So what I would suggest is choose, an event or a moment or, an activity or a time in your life that was, that you consider extremely important or significant. And we all have these kind of turning points in our lives. So it's picking one of those, picking something that's really significant. And then just in the simplest way you can, is just tell the story of that event or that night or that week, whatever it happened to be. And then once you have that down, you can go back and write about what led up to that. And then you can write about the consequences of that significant act or moment or time, what came afterwards. And if you get that far, you already have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You have the basic structure of a story. And then you can, you know, work on embellishing the language or, you know, embellishing, enhancing the scenes and your word choice and so forth. The other thing I would suggest is, if you're having trouble getting started, is take a class or a workshop where you have to, you know, turn something in each week, and you have an audience that's built in for
that's
you.
That's a great idea. I
find that with my students, many of them said, well, you know, it took the class to get them actually, you know, going from wanting to write to actually writing. So my basic advice is any way that you can start the story, you know, start it. As I said, I didn't even have a character when I started A Night and Its Longings. I simply had those images of night, and then what came next was, you know, my character Jake, this crime writer who's living in the village and who's, you know, lamenting the fact that his one true love is gone. And then, you know, step by step, the story started to, you know, emerge from there. Then he, you know, he goes into this investigation of, you know, of why she disappeared. And in that process of investigating why she disappeared, he's really learning about himself and his own, you know, his own wants and his own needs and the things that he did wrong in his life and the things that he could do better in the future. So it's a kind of a parallel journey, the journey of the investigator externally, and then the investigation that goes on simultaneously, because he learns more about himself as time goes on.
And is that truly a reflection of yourself that you're looking at and talking about?
Absolutely. I think it's a reflection of all of us. It's what we do. I mean, we experience the world, but we experience it, you know, from our inner, you know, from our own unique vantage point. So we're always seeing the world as we see it, not necessarily, you know, objectively, but as we see it. So I think there's always those two things going on. We're experiencing the world, but at the same time, we're experiencing ourselves. We're learning more about ourselves as we learn more about the world, and vice versa.
Right. And they do say that even if you're journaling, you're learning about it. Philip, I know that you're also an award-winning film writer and director, and you've also played, your plays have appeared off of Broadway. How did you get into that? I mean, so many talents under, you know, one hat there. I love it.
Oh, well, yeah, it was an editor at Doubleday at one point said to me, you know, your stories, your novels don't have much dialogue. They're very much narrative driven, prose driven. I thought about it and I thought, yeah, you're right. And so it was always more comfortable for me to simply write narration rather than scenes and dialogue. So I thought, well, what's the best way to learn how to do, you know, scenes where there's a lot of dialogue? So I thought, well, I'll start taking playwriting classes, which is what I did. I got to the point where not only did I feel more comfortable writing dialogue, but I actually, you know, got to really like it. And, you know, particularly as a device for moving a story along more quickly, for getting us, more immediately and deeply inside the characters, dialogue, you know, reveals so much about us. So I really got to like it, and I also like the communal aspect of writing plays and movies, because you're working with a team. So it's a nice counterbalance to the many hours every day I spend alone, you know, at the computer, you know, writing a book. When you write a play, then you get to work with actors and directors and
right.
it's a whole, it's a different kind of, it's a shared experience, and it's a nice experience too.
I love it. Well, this was a very interesting, and I love that you just said, you know, kind of start your story, then add characters to it, and really get started. That's really the bottom line, right? I mean, anybody can hopefully write a book, right? We all have our golden nuggets and our stories and our places that we've been in our lives, and we can all learn from it. And that's what I love being a radio host, is just hearing, you know, where people have been and what they want the world to know about them. So I love it. And again, Philip, how can my listeners find out more about you and follow you and obviously get your book?
Sure. Well, the book is available, Night and Its Longings. It's available at Amazon and everywhere books are sold. My personal website is just my name, Philip, with one L, and the last name C-I-O, F as in Frank, ARI.com. I'd be happy to answer any questions that your listeners might have about writing or getting started. It also, you know, goes through, gives excerpts from all my books so you get a sense of my writing. But if you can't remember how to spell my name, just, you know, type in to Amazon Night and Its Longings, or, you know, just into Google, and you'll get my name, and then you can get, you know, find me on my website. I'm happy to talk to anybody or answer questions that people have about writing. And I definitely think it's doable, and if you don't write it, if you don't write those experiences, they're lost. They're gone. So it's like creating a child and putting a child into the world to, you know, it's something that will live after you. And if you don't do it, it's not going to get done, because nobody has experienced what you have.
You know what?
You
that
have.
Just kind of reminds me, if you don't make a decision, somebody else will make it for you. So
Right.
Write your stories out so somebody can know what really lived in your heart. So I love it. Philip, thank you so much for being a guest here, and please share our show with everyone. It's The Brighter Side of Life and Business, the Kim Pagano Show, and I thank you so much for sharing your passion here.
Thank you very much for having me, Kim.
You got it. Take care. Best of luck with you. Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And my next guest, Tyler Potts, this is all about spring now and planting season, and he's going to give us some incredible ideas. So I love planting. Let's welcome Tyler.
Hey, Tyler. Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for joining us here on my show, The Brighter Side of Life and Business. And, of course, let's talk to Tyler Potts. He's a buyer for Tractor Supply Company. And, you know what? I love going into Tractor Supply, I have to tell you. There's always, like, some hidden treasures in there. It's not just all tools, but I do have to say that it's affordable tools, right? But there's always something in there for everyone. So I'm excited to talk to you. And, of course, spring planting is one of my favorite things. I love to plant in my backyard. So I know that you guys are doing some surveys that millions of Americans plan to dig in their dirt, right, and how to plant now for a delicious money-saving harvest. I love that. So talk to us, Tyler.
Yeah, so just to your point, we are seeing that more and more people are becoming a lot more aware of not only the quality of food, but how their food is grown. So more people are starting to get into gardening, and it's not like their typical in-ground gardening that you're used to, and your grandparents potentially having at some point. It's really an increase in our small space gardening, where people are transitioning to a raised bed and or a container garden as they're looking for more of an instant patio-ready, instant gratification for their vegetables and herbs this year.
That's so cool. So, I mean, like I have a lot of yard, so I have room for that. But even for somebody that's even in a condo or whatever, right? Is that something they could buy there, like a raised, you know, like you've even seen those tin planters, right? And how much could you get in those?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's something for every person at your local store. If you're looking for, you know, items for an in-ground garden, we have everything you need for that. But if you're looking to transition to a raised bed and or container, or if you're new to gardening, we definitely have everything for that as well. I would say that my wife and I, we have a little bit of a yard, but it's pretty small. So we actually do container gardening. It helps a lot, especially if you're looking for something and you're only wanting two or three plants rather than having a large raised bed planter. You can always do a container. And I've also even done it in a bucket before, which is interesting, but it still works. You can drill some holes in a bucket and plant it.
So every time you do like a container planting, let's just start there. Do you always have to have holes in the bottom for it to drain?
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. You want to make sure you have holes in the bottom, and then there's a vast assortment of soils that you can pick from at your local store. The good thing about a container garden and a raised bed garden is that you can actually control the quality of your soil, whereas an in-ground, you know, it takes a lot more work, and you have to get a soil test done by your county extension office to make sure your soil has the nutrients it needs for your garden to prosper.
Oh, that's really interesting too. Okay, so it actually might be better to do raised beds or containers than right in your ground, right?
Yes, it is. I mean, I would say it depends on what the customer is looking for, or the person is looking for. If you're wanting an in-ground, or if you're wanting a lot of variety and several different plants, in-ground is probably your best option just because of space. But if you know exactly what you want to plant and you're only going to have a handful of plants this year, then the raised bed and or the container is probably the best option for you.
So let me ask you, how deep does the raised bed have to be?
So,
does that matter on what you're planting?
So they actually, what's really cool about the plants that we offer is that on the actual card of the plant, it'll tell you how it does well. Is it good for a container, which obviously a raised bed as well, or is it something you need to plant in the ground? So most of our raised beds are, I would call, 2 to 2.5 feet deep. Depending on the different one you choose from. Some may be a little shorter, but overall, if you look at the actual growing card when you buy the plant, it'll tell you if it'll do well in either of those assets or areas.
And what kind of sun it needs or shade it needs, right? It's pretty much self-explanatory right there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, the sun is crucial. You want to make sure that if you are getting ready to start planting this year, you know how much sun your plants are going to need. Because that obviously vegetables love the sun, they love the heat, which is another good asset or aspect of a raised bed or a container is that you can move it around based off the sun if you're in a more shaded area.
Okay, I love it. And so is this something new that you guys are carrying, or has Tractor Supply always had plants?
Yes, we've always had plants. We are building a larger assortment of plants. There will be some local stores that do have a garden center, and the garden center does have a wider assortment of plants and also the accessories that you may need as far as a raised bed, soils, and the fertilizers.
I love it. Okay, so really quick, what is the easiest vegetable to plant and grow?
So, So my opinion would definitely be the tomato plant. It is by far the easiest to grow. There is tons of different varieties of the tomato plant too. And you can do so much with a tomato. You have your salsa, sauces, actual tomato sandwich. I love a fresh homegrown tomato. And so I would definitely say that is probably the easiest if you're just getting into gardening.
I love it. What's the hardest?
Yeah, so that's the other great thing about a tomato. A tomato will yield anywhere from 20 to 90 tomatoes, depending on the health of the plant and the variety throughout spring. So that's a really great way to combat, you know, grocery prices as we continue to see them increasing. You're spending a few bucks on a plant that's going to produce a lot of produce for you.
Wow, I love that. And so what would you not suggest somebody to start off with you're a little kid when you first do this because you're so excited to see what's coming up, you know? Would you definitely not do seeds, correct?
Yeah, I would probably stay away from seeds if possible. And I would also, depending on where you're gardening and what kind of garden you're building, if it's a raised bed or a container, I would stay away from anything with a vine. Those are a lot harder to deal with when it comes to a raised bed. If you're doing like a green bean or any kind of beans in that aspect, you have to build a trellis for the beans to stalk to run up. And they're a little bit harder to tend to, so I would definitely stick away from those as far as a seed and or anything that has a vine-type plant if you're just starting out.
Okay, perfect. And, of course, this is the perfect time to start buying your plants, correct? So
it is.
Give us five plants that we should go buy at Tractor Supply.
So definitely the tomato plant, mm-hmm. your peppers, any type of peppers you have. Carrots mm-hmm. are also really popular, as mm-hmm. well as any of your herbs. Herbs are really big. They're very easy to maintain as well. If you are new to gardening and if you don't want to jump straight into vegetables, herbs are really good because a lot of recipes nowadays call for fresh herbs. So why not clip it yourself?
Yeah. Love it. Tyler, super inspiring. I love this time of season to start kind of like doing DIY. Is it DIY? Yeah, do it yourself, right? Planting.
Right.
So anyways, Tyler, thanks so much for joining us here on the Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life and Business. And reach out to me through social. We'd love to share what you're doing.
Awesome. Thank you.
You got it. Have a great rest of your day. Take care.
And, of course, thank you so much. Happy Easter to all of you that are celebrating. And, of course, I end all of my shows with a moment of happiness. All our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. With that, have a great rest of your weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.
It might seem crazy.